Blog Talk Radio.
Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately that I care? Yeah. Have I told you lately that you are wonderful? You're magnificent and so much more. Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately you're my king? Have I told you lately that you are number one? You're magnificent.
Good evening, and I wish you all a very warm Memorial Day. And that may sound strange, warm Memorial Day. Certainly, Memorial Day is a time for people to get together. It's time for people to have fun. Usually, it's signified with cooking out and barbecue, definitely barbecue, macaroni and cheese, baked beans, potato salad, all of that. And it's also a time in the midst of having fun. It's a time that we get together and take a pause for the cause of remembering those who have died. Oftentimes,
In the very beginning, Memorial Day was a day that was set aside for us to take time to remember the fallen heroes, people who die in combat, in the act of war, people who die giving their lives for our country. Over time, that began to transition, if you will, into a time for us to take a pause to remember people who died who we love and who we know. Oftentimes, people who've been buried have loved ones who will come to their cemetery, to the cemetery where they are, and lay flowers. And it's a time to remember, reflect, and even celebrate the life of our loved ones. And I think just as our culture, in the midst of sadness, we have to celebrate life. And perhaps that's why we join together and we get barbecue and we have family cookouts and we enjoy life on Memorial Day. It's more than just a day off work for those of us who don't have to work. I was at a barbecue place earlier today, getting barbecue here in Savannah, Georgia, in beautiful Savannah, Georgia. And it was interesting to see many, I'm not going to say hundreds, but definitely many, many people out preparing to enjoy a day of fellowship with family and friends. And there was liveliness, it was conversation, it was fun, it was jovial. It was not a time where people were sad. And so it's good for us, even though we're pausing to remember lost loved ones, it is also a time to celebrate life. So, good evening. This is Dr. Maxine Bryant, and you are tuned in to the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show. For those of you who wish to call in to pay tribute to your loved ones, feel free to do that anytime during the first 30 minutes of the show. And you can do that by dialing 347-539-5285. Again, 347-539-5285. If you're listening and you're listening on your computer, on the internet, invite your friends to join in with you, your loved ones, your family. They can join in at www.blogtalkradio.com/ gumbo for the soul. We are a part of the Tri-Family production. Beverly Black is the producer. So I want to just begin this segment, which is normally Groove Talk, and we're talking about how to live, to celebrate life in spite of troubles and struggles. How do we maintain our groove? And today, since it is Memorial Day and we're calling this our Memorial Day special, we will focus on how do you live when your loved one has died? How do you continue? How do you push on? And again, if any of you have a tribute that you want to pay, a person that you want to honor, words that you want to offer up for, perhaps for encouragement and comfort for others, feel free to do so. 347-539-5285. So as I said at the top of the show, Memorial Day actually began as a time to memorialize and to honor and pay tribute to those fallen individuals who died in combat, who died in battle, who died protecting our freedom, so to speak. Even in the Civil War, those who died were fighting for, at least the Union people were fighting for a number of reasons, and part of those reasons were for the freedom of the enslaved Africans. So freedom has been a tenet, connected, if you will, with Memorial Day, at least with those who we are honoring. And so, as I mentioned also, Memorial Day transitioned from being just a time to remember fallen loved ones who died in battle to remembering those who we love who passed on. As I shared in my video this morning, I am among those people who had someone near and dear to me to die. In 1989, I lost my father to cancer, and I was a daddy's girl, so that hurt. That hurt bad. That was September 11th, interestingly enough, 1989. Just a year and a half later, 1991, I lost my mom to cancer. So at a very young age, here I find myself without my parents, and I'm raising my two children and am now divorced, and I'm raising them by myself. And we go through the ups and downs of parenthood and childhood and teenage years and all of that. You all who have raised children know what I'm talking about there. And my daughter, Yasha, many of you know her, had a trouble teenage years. That's not unusual. Teenage year, often troublesome, so that's not uncommon. And we, you know, we were embattled, I think, with each other. But she grew up into a woman, and a woman that God had designed for her to be. We grew closer and closer and closer. For her 20th birthday, as a matter of fact, we traveled to the Bahamas. We took a girlfriend cruise, mother and daughter cruise, went to the Bahamas for a weekend and just had the best time. And over the next 10 years, God allowed our relationship to blossom. And I think he did that because he knew that our relationship needed to heal. It needed to come full circle where he took her. And so on November 26, 2011, every birthday, every day of her, the anniversary of her death, and every Memorial Day, I remember her. I pay tribute to her. I don't remember just the sad times, because it's more to her than the sad times. There's also the fun times, times that we could laugh together, the times that we could enjoy living together, not living together literally, but enjoy living life together. And so on Memorial Day, I choose to remember those good times and to honor my daughter by celebrating her life. For some people, as I talk to people when I'm doing conferences or just talking in general, I find that for some people, Memorial Day is very difficult, very hard, because we are reminded of loss during that time. We're reminded that the one we loved is no longer here, and we can't celebrate. Some people cannot move or transition from mourning to celebration. We can't do it, and we get stuck in that grief period that we're mourning the loss of a loved one. And to you all, I think I would say your right now is not your always. I posted that a little bit ago, a few weeks ago probably, on Facebook. Your right now is not your always. And so for those of you who are in the throes of feeling bad and not wanting to embrace the pain, or not wanting to embrace the day because of the pain, and a feeling that the memories are too hard, I say to you that the right now is not the always. Celebrate the life of your loved one. Remember the positive times. Remember times that you laugh, the times that you share perhaps a glass of wine together, the times that you went to the amusement, whatever, walk in the night. Remember the good times, because that's how we can best celebrate them. That's how we can best honor them, is by remembering the good times. Now, for many of you, you know that one of the gifts that God gave me was the gift of poetry, to be able to write words down and put them in poetry. And so I want to share one of the poems I wrote. I wrote it to Mayasha, and I think it symbolizes not only it's mother's love, and it symbolizes not only relationship as it lasts or as it exists while both people are living, but our love continues. Our love continues. That one who is gone, even after they're gone. And so, listen to this and see how it resonates with you. As I mentioned before, it's called A Mother's Love. Like a stream that continually traveling over rocks and pebbles, like a river that ebbs and flows, transforming matter as it goes, like an ocean deep and wide, impacting the earth with each tide, so is a mother's love. Like the roots of a flower beneath the dirt, supporting the bud above the earth. Like a blade of grass grows in concrete cracks, in spite of forces that should hold it back. Like a leaf moving in silent melody, rhythmically nodding in quiet breeze, so is a mother's love. Like a flickering flame lights a room, removing fear, erasing darkness that would consume. Like a candle refreshes air, providing pleasant perfume everywhere. The moon and stars brighten the black canopy, guiding those beneath who cannot see. Like the hands on clock move without resting, reminding us to count each day's blessings. Like the day on calendars continue without ceasing, beckoning us to appreciate them as our years keep increasing. Like centuries measured by decades and years, helping us to remember laughter and years. So is a mother's love. Like water with no borders, like foliage speaks language, like light speeds in flight, like time will continue even after I bid you adieu. So is mother's love, boundless, endless, timeless. I love you. I believe coin speaks the sentiments of many of you who've lost a loved one, even though they're gone. I understand that we have a caller from area code 408. Caller from 408.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, Dr. Maxine. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm blessed. I just wanted to come in and acknowledge your show. Happy Memorial Day to you. And you said some comments that I wanted to acknowledge. But first, that was a very beautiful tribute to your daughter. And God bless her, and God bless the time, like you said, that God allowed you all to spend together, to bond in that journey. And the one thing that I know for sure is that the only thing another queen can do in your shoes is sit down. No one can walk in your shoes. No one will know the measure and the depth of your journey and what you carry. Now, I want to say, or what your heart carries. Let me say what your heart carries. And I want to say, I acknowledge your mother and your father. Rest in peace in heaven. My mother and father both have gone on for the same exact reasons yours have. And I am too a daddy's girl. A daddy's girl to the bone. And so, Queen, I just wanted to come in and say any distractions or any adversities that have come between our communication leading up to today's show, may they be removed and gone with the wind, and may you continue on having just a blessed, blessed journey as a daddy's girl and as a queen wearing your crown, okay?
I appreciate that. Daddy's girl. Give it up for the daddy's girl. I think fathers have such a unique place in their daughters' lives. As a matter of fact, CDC did a study many years ago, and it's the pheromones that a young girl begins to develop as she's going into puberty are the presence of her biological father. And when that biological father is absent for whatever reason, those pheromones are negatively impacted. She finds herself easily floundering through life. And so there's actually a study that speaks to the value of that relationship between father and daughter. So blessings to you. Blessed to you, daddy's girl. I love it. I love it. Thank you much, Queen. And so now we're going
Thank you so much. Dr. Maxine, may I just say a comment? And this is for the women. Thank you. I appreciate it. Because we're daddy's girls, the one thing that I cannot imagine, and especially in a time where, you know, women are acknowledging the Me Too movement and the different things, I cannot imagine the heavy laden hearts that others carry that did not receive the validation that, you know, being a daddy's girl merits and warrants. And so to the queens that have the other side of that equation where they are disconnected from that main vein that validates you as that queen, and you've had to, you know, acquiesce in that validation through your journey, God and what have you. I tip my hat to those queens because I cannot imagine having my father absent from my life. And so I just wanted to as well acknowledge the strength that those queens walk into. And I want to thank you for allowing my voice on your show. You have a blessed one.
Thank you. Well said. Well said. And there are those who may have no idea fully what it's like to have a father present in the home, and that may be been incarcerated. And so I do invite you all to stay for the second half of our show, where we will begin to talk about the impact of incarceration on the family in the segment called When is the Day? Guest for that segment is Attorney Maxine King. You'll hear from her in just a bit. In the meantime, stay tuned. We're going to break for a commercial.
Motivational, educational, informative, inspirational, relevant, knowledgeable, nationally, internationally. These are the words seminar participants have used to describe this dynamic presenter. Topics as non-threatening as customer service,
topics as delicate as race relations, diversity, and inclusion. Dr. Maxine Bryan has repeatedly captured the hearts and minds of many audiences. Dr. Bryant's expertise has assisted private industry and nonprofit businesses as they move forward to realize their desired goals. Call Pat Maltz at 612-876-7964. Book Dr. Bryant. Take your workforce to the next level.
All right. Thank you. We've had a wonderful call on the line. Who was Daddy's Girl? Yes. Hats off to Daddy's Girl. Hats off to women in particular. And I'm going to get to the men too. But definitely for the women who had to bear the burden of loss, whether that was the loss of a husband, the loss of a child, a sibling, or whatever. We women have to recognize our strength. We really are strong. I know that in the Bible it says that females are the weaker vessel, but it didn't mean that we are weak and unable to bear burdens. Rather, we are very, very strong. We do desire, in many cases, to lean on our partners and have someone to kind of cover us. But that in no means means, or that in no wise means, that we are weak. So my hats off to strong women, particularly the strong, I got to say it because I am, a strong African-American queen women that we are. And just all females who are journeying life. Minus the love of a loved one. So I want to give hats off to that. I also want to make mention, as we continue this particular segment dedicated to Memorial Day, I want to make mention on the origin of this day. Now, there's been some back and forth, even in social media, particularly with the programs, internet station or called The Root, that put out a story that indicated that African Americans were actually the ones who headed the tradition of honoring fallen soldiers, and that was the precursor, if you will, to Memorial Day. And there's been debate about that, whether or not that's true, whether or not that honoring that will be a cause for racial divide or a contributing factor to racial divide. I've seen arguments back and forth. And I think where I've landed, while we do want history to be perfect, and I am 100% for accurate history, almost to a fault. I didn't complain this last semester that I had a student complain that I was racist because I am determined to present accurate history. But nevertheless, my land as it relates to Memorial Day and its history is that we may never know the full origins. What we do know is that it has been set aside to remember those who are our loved ones who have fallen, and that it's an honor to be alive to remember. And I that's what we need to recall. It is an honor to be alive, to remember our loved ones. And again, it's so very important to remember times. It takes a lot of energy to be sad. It takes a lot of energy to live in grief. And so, again, I want to encourage those of you who may be stuck in that place to remember your energy. I think that's what I want to say. I need you to put your energy to remembering the good times with the loved ones and celebrate the life they lived, because no matter how short or how long they were with you, you got a chance to share space and time and place together. That's something to be That's something to be excited about. That's something to celebrate. And so, what
journey to do just that on this Memorial Day. I know that we transition in terms of Memorial Day to a time where we celebrate and have fun in the yard, at the cookout, at the park, children playing, and adults and food is being eaten and the music is playing and all of that. And that's good. I want to encourage you to continue that. But if you're stuck in a negative place when it comes to today, I encourage you to find the strength to get up out of your funk. As a matter of fact, I just had lunch with someone yesterday, and she was in a thought about her mother who had passed. She thought about her sister who had passed. She thought about the struggles that she's facing, and she was in a funk. And the enemy wants you to stay in a place of funk, but you can choose to move from funk to groove. You can choose groove, that place where we are rooted and grounded in who we are because we know whose we are. And it is in that place that I choose to reside. I, too, miss my daughter terribly, but I don't live in that place called sad. I transition to be able to celebrate all that she brought to my life and to be able to honor all the things that she was. She was full of life. She was full of vivaciousness. She was a comedian in her own right. May Asha embrace life. And so I can't be sad. I got to push past the funk into the groove. So I encourage you to do that. So listen, the time to talk about that is winding down, getting ready to transition into when is my debt paid? Now, remember earlier I mentioned that there are some who didn't get a chance to experience having a father in the home or a husband who was right there or the father to their children who was right there because he was incarcerated. God gave me a passion for people with criminal histories. Many, many years ago, I dedicated a lifetime of my energy and my education to learn how to help them to fully reintegrate back into society. There's a difference between reentry and reintegration. We're going to talk about that. We're getting ready to take a commercial break. When we come back from the commercial break, you will hear me talking with Attorney Max King, all the way from Indianapolis, Indiana. And we're going to focus on the impact of incarceration on the families. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show.
Have you been frozen in fear, stuck on stupid, lost in love, tormented with troubling relationships, felt disconnected, discombobulated, and dismissed? Has parenting ever felt more like a burden than a blessing? Have you questioned your own sanity, doubted your own self-worth, wish you were someone else somewhere else? Do you ever feel you're not good enough, not pretty enough, not smart enough, not talented enough, unworthy, unlovable, undeserving? Then you know what it feels like to be out of your groove. The Groove Doctor has just the right prescription. Get your copy of Dr. Maxine Bryant's book, I Want My Groove Back God's Way. Begin your journey today living in real groove. Dr. Maxine Bryant uses her own experiences and spiritual insights to guide the reader to a place of real groove by helping readers attain a holistic state of groove based on Bible principles. Go to www.mygrooveback.com to order your copy today. $10 plus shipping costs. You will be glad you did.
All right, all right, all right. As I said earlier, one of the, and I learned early on that I had a passion in my life for people who have been incarcerated. And one of my passions is to help them
to re-enter society. And there's a difference between re-entering and reintegrating. Reentering puts the onus, in my mind, on the person who's transitioning from prison to community. They have to find the job. They have to get it right. They have to live the way that they're supposed to be living, the correct way. The onus is all on them. However, what I believe is that when true reintegration occurs, the community embraces this person. The community supports this person. The community helps them to become a valuable part of the fabric of society. And so I embrace, I celebrate, I advocate for reintegration. Having said that, Maxine King, how are you?
Hello, Dr. Bryan. I am fine. Thank you.
Awesome, awesome. I am honored to have you on the show. Oh, my goodness. This is absolutely a delight. So I introduced you a little bit. I told the listening audience that you are an attorney, that you have been a public defender, and that you have been a small claims court judge. But I'd like to give you an opportunity to talk about yourself for a few minutes. Tell our listening audience, who is Maxine King? Why did she get into law? What motivates you? What inspires you to do what you do?
Well, I thank you, Dr. Bryan. First, let me just say thank you for allowing me to be on your show. I greatly appreciate it, and thank you so much. The question you posed to me is, who is Maxine King? Who is Maxine King? Maxine King is the eldest of four children. Four siblings, females, the daughter of Mac and Elizabeth King. You also posed the question, well, why did you become an attorney? Why did you get into law? Well, I want to bring social justice. One of the reasons why I studied the law was to be a civil rights attorney. A civil rights attorney. Yes, yes, yes. So that was the motivating factor why I went to law school.
Okay. And so,
yes.
What did you want to do with that? Because you and I think, are around the same age. So you grew up during the civil rights era. And so you probably can remember a little bit about Martin Luther King and the marches and all of that and all of the inequities that were being thrown at African Americans during that time. So how did you want to make a difference?
Well, quite honestly, I was a young one, very, very young, and I don't remember much of that. But what I do recall as a toddler, a young child, is that my father was always running for elections. He was always doing something in the community. So I always saw stuff that was, yes, posters that he had made, persons over our house and whatnot. So that was my first experience of that. And then once I graduated and went to, let's say, junior high school and high school, then I started learning about those who were leaders in our community. And normally the leaders had a law degree. So for my mindset, I thought, well, one way to bring justice to the unjust was to make sure you have a law degree. And so as I studied, and then I went to IU Bloomington, I found out that we did not have to have a per se major in pre-law in order to go to law school. So then I majored in Afro-American studies with a minor in speech communication. And so then once I graduated from IU Bloomington, then took a year off, created my own internship, and worked for a year, and then I attended law school. And so once I graduated from IU law school here in Indianapolis, Indiana, I thought, well, I always had a passion for, let's say, employment discrimination. And I want to tell you now, those are the hardest cases. Employment discrimination law. Very difficult. Yes. So I worked with
that hard?
Getting the information. First of all, most all your corporations have attorneys on staff, okay? And so it's just getting that, we call it discovery, getting the information that you're going to use against them, okay? Getting the witnesses. The witness is still working for the corporation. So quite naturally, they're not going to remember everything. Documents may be lost, misplaced, and whatnot. So, and then also, your client is no longer working for the company. Either A, they were so distraught that they had to quit, was forced to terminate their services, or they were terminated, and thus they can't even pay you. So, and then you get the, you know, get the discovery and whatnot. So it just makes it that more difficult.
Okay.
And then things
okay.
have changed from what type of discrimination, just like anything else, what's the new trend? At one time it was persons of color, then it became women, then become those persons of same sex. It just changes, just like everything else, you know. So
okay.
after that, then I start practicing family law, and that's where I pretty much been was in family law. So here I am today.
All right, awesome. So I want to get back to your experience being a public defender and even a small claims court judge. But before we do that, I want to focus a little bit on family law, your experience there. And what do you see? What has been your experience and how incarceration impacts families?
Well, we could take it from, it just depends on how you want to take this animal. Okay, you know, it can be in one way, it can be emotional for the children. If the father was very active with his children and he's no longer present, it could be a financial crisis. So, for example, you know, you have a two family income, and then all of a sudden, if one member goes to prison, now you're on a one income, but you have a lifestyle of what a two parent income. Okay, and then we can't forget about the children. You know, they're used to having two parents. One parent's helping with the homework. The other one take them to the baseball games and whatnot. They're no longer there. And it's just like divorce. You know, when parents go through divorces, the children somehow think it's their fault. Or if I was good, this would not have happened. The same thing if the parent goes to prison. Did I have changed anything? Or they may be embarrassed if it was a very notable case or whatnot. It could be anything, too, being separated from, you know, the person who goes off to prison. And then you have to think about also, hypothetically, say the parents were not married. And then this gentleman, we'll just say gentleman, has a child support order. And then he goes to prison. Well, he's not paying his child support. So he gets further and further behind. And then once he, in his release, he have this big what? Arrearage, support arrearage. But they have changed the law where those persons who are in prison can petition the court to reduce their child support. And there are some remedies still available for those persons who want to participate. But another thing, you know, how can it affect? It can affect, number one, you know, if you're in prison, you cannot vote. If you actually incarcerated.
Right. And
see,
you know,
I lost.
What I found out next thing.
What's that?
There are two states that let prisoners vote, Vermont and Maine.
Wow.
While you are incarcerated, prisoners in Vermont and Maine can vote. Now, here's the question. What's the population of Vermont and Maine?
What is the population?
That's thinking. Well, not in terms of just numbers, but in terms of percentages of blacks and whites.
I'm sure it's not that many.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying. Okay, go on.
And see, it's interesting you said that because I lost my second term as small claims court judge by, what, 8 votes? And so if they could participate, who knows? But that is one way of having a power in your community, to have a say-so if you participate in the political process. Another thing is, too, if we talk about family law and parents who are incarcerated, I served as a public defender. Okay, and I served on the civil part, which I represented parents of child in need of services. So we may call that CPS cases, Child and Protective Services.
Mm.
And if the parent did not do what was expected in a reasonable amount of time, those cases turn over to TPR, Termination of Parental Rights. So, for example, you may have a case where a parent is not making sure the child attends school, the child is coming to school not eating, not having clean clothes, and then also the school officials are they do have obligations. They think a child is in need of services to contact the local authorities, and they come into investigation. What happens is if one parent is incarcerated, because normally what they can do is hear the case and then temporarily give one parent who's not the non-offender temporary custody of the child. Well, mm-hmm. if you have one parent imprisoned and the other not doing what he or she should, then this child is in foster care, whether it be with a relative or non-relative. Well, after about of time, whether it be 6 months or a year, if this one parent who is not incarcerated is not doing what they're doing, it could be anything from getting a job or taking parenting classes, being free and clear of drugs, then what happens is then that child is placed, well, they would terminate the parental rights of the parents, both parents.
Oh,
because
wow.
the one who's incarcerated, well, you can't raise your child while you're incarcerated.
Wow. Wow. That is so true. Okay. Well, I want to go back to what you said about petitioning the court. I am so glad to know that that law is changing and that men who are behind bars who have a child support order can petition. So I have two questions. One, who tells them that? Do they know that they have the right to petition? And then I guess it's really three questions. What is the process? And then even though they can petition what, to have it reduced, is it still accruing?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, who tells them? Well, you know, ignorance of the law is no excuse. So you may have what's called, we call it like a jailhouse lawyer, okay? Number two, what is the process? Well, the process is, number one, that the parent that's in prison will file what's called a petition to modify child support. And normally, I know for Marion County, it's on the website. As a matter of fact, on the State of Indiana Supreme Court, there is a form where they can download, fill in the blank, and then mail that to the court.
Okay.
And then also, and then we talk about once you get, and this is another thing too, with family law, because it costs so much and our sheriffs do not have the income, they no longer transporting the, we'll say the prisoners. So but what can be is two things. Number one, they have court call, and if they cannot afford it, what happens is the court would do it on a conference on their phone. So what would happen is that the person would petition a court. The court would give an order. The judge would order that the person would give it to their, let's say, call it a case manager. The incarcerated person would take that to the case manager so that they know at this particular time, this gentleman needs to be in my office to make this phone call, or I'll make the phone call while he's present to the court.
Okay.
And what would happen is that the parent, the other parent, would be there, the bailiff, the court report is being taped, and then also your incarcerated parent. And they go on.
Okay.
He just appeared by telephone.
Huh.
And then,
okay.
And then there, the court would make a decision on whether or not to modify the child support. Now, the person's obligation would be based off their income. If they have a job in prison making $2 an hour, $10 a week, it would be based off that. If they do not have it, it's just based off zero, and then there won't be anything. But if there is an amount, whether it's a dollar or less, yes, it will be accruing because the court has determined you can make that payment.
Wow. Okay. I have a couple other questions that come to my mind about that, but we have a caller. One of the things that we're really excited about, Maxine, is that the community is beginning to understand that without their assistance, people who are behind bars cannot reintegrate successfully. And so that means it takes all of us. And there's a woman in Indianapolis, as a matter of fact, where you are, who offers transportation to families who want to go visit their loved ones who are incarcerated. That can help maintain family bonds. It can help the person behind bars stay abreast of what's going on the outside and maintain contact with their children and loved ones. So I believe that she's on the line now. Cecilia Wickfield, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dr.
Well, good,
Bryant. Hello.
Good afternoon. It is good to hear your voice. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And Attorney Maxine King, good afternoon.
Good
Thank
afternoon.
You. Yes. Dr. Bryant, it is so nice to hear your voice and to be on this talk show to talk about the importance of keeping families connected. We do provide transportation to 16 different prisons in the state of Indiana. We are the only transportation service to keep those families connected. And you were talking about how important it is to keep families connected. One of the research that was done a few years ago said just one visit can help reduce the recidivism rate 13%. Just one visit.
Wow.
So that's
really
how important it is. Yes, IUPUI helped and did a research on the importance of visitation. So that was one of the things that they found out, that it helps to reduce the recidivism rate for the people that getting those visits.
Now, Cecilia, because this is internet radio and because people can call in from all around the country, we have many listeners from the potential of many listeners from all over. But you're in the state of Indiana. For people who live in Indiana, can you tell them the name of your organization and how they can get in contact with you in the event that they have a loved one they want to see?
Yes, ma'am. Dr. Maxine, the name of our organization, my mother named it close to 30 years ago when my son was incarcerated. He was facing 40 years of prison time, and the Lord spoke to me about starting a shuttle service for other families like myself. And I told my mother said, use what you've got. So I took what my mother said and I named it Use What You've Got, Prison Ministry, Keeping Families Connected. We have a long name because when I first started, it was just Use What You Got. And they said, oh, people don't know what Use What You Got is. So we added a little bit. So the name of it is Use What You've Got, Prison Ministry, Keeping Families Connected. And so we are a 501c3 nonprofit. This is our 30th year that we have provided transportation. And if they would like to visit their loved ones, we have our number is 317-924-4124. Again, it's 317-924-4124. And they can give us a call, let us know which prison that they would like to visit, and we give them a date because we have scheduled times that we visit different prisons. So I appreciate this opportunity to be on your radio show, Dr. Bryant, with Attorney Maxine King, and to talk about the ministries and the families, because I am an inmate mother. So I do understand the hidden victims, and that's what we're called.
Yes. Yes, you do. And did you say your ministry has been in operation for 30 years?
Yes, ma'am. It started in 1988. My son graduated from high school, Chautauqua, in 1988 in June. By July the 16th, it was in the newspaper. He made the newspaper for armed robbery. That was in July. And as I was visiting him and another young man, by September of 88, we had started using our own vehicle, taking families to the 9 different prisons back then to visit their loved ones. They would ask if they could ride with us. And so I'm thinking, well, my son's facing 40 years. It would be good if we all rode together. And they said, well, there's no shuttle service. There's no buses for the family. And I don't know if you realize, but the prisons are not close where a family member can get to. They like 3 hours away. So we're talking at least 12 hours that you're 3 hours to go there, 2 or 3 hours to visit, 3 hours to come back, and then we stop in between so they can rest. And, you know, some people smoke, and they can smoke and use the restroom. So the prisons are not close.
But the impact, just think about the impact that you have on this incarcerated person's life, you know? The 6 hours, my goodness. Him seeing his loved ones, his son or daughter, wife, you know?
Yes.
That is so important.
It is. It is. And again, the research proved those visits helps to reduce 13%. Now, you understand, if they have a mental problem, which they're finding out that 25 to 80% of people who are incarcerated do have some type of brain injury from falling out of trees or fighting, being hit in the head. My son has traumatic brain injury. He was in a car accident. So when they have those type of problems, then that's a different, set of issues there. But it's important to visit. Research talks about a touch, just a touch of how it heals your body. You know, a lot of people get body massages just to get the energy going back in their bodies. Well, when you hug someone or you touch someone, you're helping to heal their brains. You're helping to heal their emotions. So that touch is very, very important for each person, the wife, the mother, the children, the inmate, it's just important. That visitation is just very important.
Absolutely. Well, we're thankful for you and your ministry. Thank you so very much for calling in. We appreciate you. Fulfill your witch bill. Use what you got. Prison ministry, keeping families connected. Thank you so very much, Cecilia.
Thank you for talking with me.
Not a problem, not a problem. So, Attorney Maxine King, Cecilia mentioned something. She talked about traumatic brain injury. And one of the things that I'm a proponent of is advocating for trauma-informed care in prison, because many times people are in our prisons who have some type of trauma. It may not have been falling out of a tree. It may not have been in a car accident. But within the family, any type of abuse that person may have incurred while they are younger may contribute to the brain functioning differently. There are studies that show that too. We're going to continue with that part of the conversation, but I understand we have at least perhaps two other callers on the line. So caller number one from area code 317. Caller number one, you're on the line.
Hi, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I actually know Maxine King very well, and my name is Tammy Moon, and I can actually add some input both personally and professionally to the questions that you're asking in regards to the criminal justice system with our criminals that are incarcerated and the traumatic brain injury issues. Professionally speaking, I can do that. I know Maxine because I have a history as being an investigative paralegal, but my background educationally and professionally consist in criminal justice, family law, domestic violence, criminal investigations, as well as legislation. And professionally, I'm going to just jump right into the topic you were just talking about, something Maxine and most people who know me do not know, but I have reached a point in my life that I am more comfortable now in speaking of the issues that I have had to face in my own family and what actually led me to choose to do what I do and professionally in law on the criminal justice aspect. You were talking about traumatic brain injury and how that can affect and cause crime, correct?
Yeah.
I am the youngest sister of a brother, half-brother, who actually committed a crime in 1996. to which he will be serving his jail time until at least 2049.
Wow.
He had committed murder, and he is currently located in Pendleton Penitentiary. And at the time of the murder, he actually did not remember the situation. All through the trial, he claimed innocence. And actually, Terry Curry, our Indiana State prosecutor, or Indianapolis prosecutor, was actually his appeals attorney. And later on, years down the road, he had went through a battery of tests on his brain, and they had discovered that my brother had developed, due to childhood abuse from his stepmother, he had suffered a traumatic injury to his behavioral cognition, to the area of his behavioral cognition. And it damaged the brain so much that it not only changed him as a person from what he could have been to something that he should not have been. And he has been deemed sociopath because of something that is not even technically his original fault. But, however, he did commit a crime. And he committed several crimes, actually. And as a family, one of the things that I can tell you is very difficult is when we have this happen and people in our families commit crimes and heinous acts of crimes, not just, you know, going and pointing a gun and shooting somebody. I'm talking about possibly taking a person's body and shoving it into a chipper and, you know, having their body come out the other side and losing their mind completely. And when we have situations, you know, like you said too, 25 to 80%, more close, in my opinion, to the 80% to 85% of our criminals that are serving time in jail do have some type of psychological disability, and it's very unfortunate. We need to focus, in my opinion, more on psychological care. Now, the question of will some of them ever be able to return to society? I think that that is very possible, but it depends upon the level of the trauma and their own mental and behavioral abilities. I mean, I, being totally honest, I do not want to see my brother in public again. And that's not because I don't love him. It's absolutely not because I don't love him. That love is unconditional. However, it's not excusable, and I would not say that he is somebody that would be good for society. However, there are other people who have varying degrees in which psychological help and analysis can help them tremendously, and they can be very much productive people in society. There are some crimes that happen because of post-traumatic stress disorder, and in those situations, people are very well in functioning and can be very well in functioning. The other part to it is we also, I think, in criminal justice as professionals, those of us that, you know, study this stuff and work with criminals and, you know, everything else, and even down, looking down at the behavior of our kids in society right now, it's not just something that happens in the family. It happens in their peers. We need a lot more of intercultural and interpersonal communications and social skills, anger management in high school. We need more sensitivity of being able to allow these kids to be heard and to be voiced instead of just thinking that they have to live this and that nobody's going to hear them. And then they turn around and have, you know, anger outbursts and people are making fun and bullying them back. And then we have a retaliation. My brother had a stepmother who beat him to the point where she would put a metal spatula in hot skillet and take the spatula out and beat him. She left him outside in the middle of the night with no coat, no shoes, told him he was a worthless piece and expensive. So not only did my brother commit a crime, but in my personal opinion, as his sister, I see people who go and do this to children, and I ask, where is society on holding them accountable? Holding that person accountable too, because not only did my brother kill somebody, but he killed somebody because of what she did to him. And to me, she's just as guilty.
Yes. One of the things that I learned as I was being educated around trauma-informed care, I went to, I was a consultant with SAMHSA, Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration. And one of the things we learned is that hurt people hurt people. And that actually, we're going to probably address this in the next Dr. Maxine Bryant show. We are an hour-long show, and we have just gone over our hour just a little bit. I do want to thank you, the last caller, for calling in, supporting Maxine's team, and for sharing your story.
Yes.
I really do appreciate that. Maxine King, it's been a pleasure having you on the show on this Memorial Day special. And to my listening audience, we have two more shows left on the blogtalkradio.com /Gumbo for the Soul. Our next show is on Monday, June the 11th, 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 4 o'clock Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. That is our next show, and after that, we have only one more show. So, know that I love you all. Thank you also very much for your support for the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show. Thank you for listeners. Thank you for the callers. Thank you, Maxine King. It's been a pleasure. Until next time, enjoy the rest of your day.
Yes, this is America, my home. Sweet home. God bless you.